Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Ohio voters get one more chance to see and hear the major party gubernatorial candidates debate before the November 6th election. The third and final debate between Republican Mike DeWine and Democrat Richard Cordray will be held tonight at Cleveland State University. Both are looking to distance themselves in what polls have shown to be a neck-and-neck race. For more information on how you can tune into the debate, visit our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Joining us now, Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau reporter Andy Chow. Welcome back.
Good morning.
And joining us, Columbus Dispatch Statehouse reporter Jim Siegel. Welcome back.
Good morning.
Also, Cincinnati Enquirer state government reporter Jesse Ballmer. Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Tonight's the final debate between Rich Cordray and Mike DeWine. We had a tamer second debate. It was one of those sort of town hall style get-togethers. What are you expecting from this one, Andy Chow?
Well, I think if you take what we had in the first debate, which was having Rich Cordray come out swinging pretty hard several times against Mike DeWine's record, that happened in the first debate. And then in the most recent polling, we saw that Cordray was catching up to DeWine. And so I would wonder if maybe that's the strategy he goes for in this last debate, once again sort of throwing some swings at DeWine on his record. I think we're going to hear about Mike DeWine's record on opioids and his record on a couple of other things, ECOT. And I would expect that. And then I would expect DeWine sort of to play a little bit of prevent defense where he just kind of puts his arms up and takes those hits while not really attacking Cordray that much.
Huh. Why?
I don't know. I just feel like he tried to in the first debate and it didn't really seem to work out. So that's just my guess. Uh-huh. But it seemed like it wasn't really sticking the same way it was for Cordray's side.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the two of them are now well established, both in debates and on television with their ads, as to what their attack points are. Mm-hmm. Cordray is hitting DeWine over, as Andy said, opioids, ECOT, and
the rape kits.
Healthcare.
Healthcare, the pre-existing conditions issue. Yeah. Meanwhile, DeWine's hitting Cordray over issue one and the rape kit issue. And so I wouldn't be surprised if they veered away from that too much at this point, unless they've found some new some new lines and new attack strategies that they think might start working. But look, I mean, and the debates can be places to test those things out for TV ads, which are going to be seen by a lot more people than the actual debates. So who knows? We'll see what they come up with.
One thing they don't talk about, Jesse Ballmer, they don't utter the word Trump if they can avoid it.
Yeah, it's been interesting. I think really the President Donald Trump has come up when the moderators or panelists have asked about him, but he isn't a person that Mike DeWine, the Republican in the race, is really volunteering. And, you know, Rich Cordray isn't tying Mike DeWine to Trump as much in the debates as he is just in conversations and in advertisements, which is interesting. President Trump is obviously someone who really gets enthusiasm up in his base and really gets enthusiasm up in the Democrats who don't like some of his policies and rhetoric and so forth. So it'll be interesting how much President Trump comes up in this third and final debate.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing how much is John Kasich going to come up in any of these debates. I don't think he's been mentioned too often.
Rich Cordray tends to bring him up more than Mike DeWine does.
Well, it is. It's a very odd circumstance where Governor Kasich, obviously the Republican governor for the last 7.5 years, is at a point now in his political leanings and positionings where he's securely against the president. But does that make him less of a Republican? I mean, he still holds a lot of conservative positions, but he's just trying to argue that Donald Trump is obviously not really a conservative and doesn't articulate any of those things well in terms of the way his tone and demeanor. But Rich Cordray almost can, and the polls have shown that these days that Kasich is almost more popular with Democrats than he is with Republicans. Which, if you had told me that 6-7 years ago, there's no way I'd have ever believed it. You know, think back to like the Senate Bill 5 debate and things of that nature.
Listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Yeah, Andy Chow.
I was going to say just the Kasich factor is an interesting one. He has said that he endorses Mike DeWine, and I think he said, I think we were all there when he said something along the lines of, now what that means and how I can help him, I don't know, because, you know, does the DeWine camp want Kasich to cut an ad for DeWine? It could help in a lot of areas, but it could also hurt in a lot of areas. So it's just his endorsement and the factor of John Kasich is just sort of like a weird one to predict.
Well, it's interesting. There's a reason why Rich Cordray is bringing up John Kasich more, mm-hmm. because he does appeal to those Democrats and to some of those, you know, centrist Republicans that we've been talking about. And Mike DeWine, it's a little bit hairier because if he really goes full force behind Kasich, then he risks alienating those voters who are really supportive of Trump. If he goes too far for Trump, then he risks alienating those Republicans who are really more Kasich Republicans. So it's just like a tighter situation for him to navigate.
A little bit of the same dynamic holds for Rich Cordray. He can't be trashing whatever relationship Mike DeWine might or might not have with Trump mm-hmm. either. He risks alienating.
It's true, but are Trump voters ever going to be Rich Cordray voters?
Right. I think there's a lot less
risk.
They're not,
but I think that it energizes him more. If mm-hmm. if there's an attack on Trump, I think his left flank then comes in and says, okay, I'm going to vote because I'm going to, you know, because they are so reactive.
And I do think there is a group of people more maybe like the Mahoning Valley area or these blue collar workers who are union workers who might tend to vote for somebody like Cordray because he's pro-union, but also they might be pro-Trump in a lot of ways, and you don't want to alienate that swath of people.
Right. And two things. One, I didn't, you know, you noticed that Mike DeWine in the last debate said he would veto a right-to-work bill. You talk mm-hmm. about those union households. We've really gone 180 on the union issues in this state. All of a sudden, there are no union opponents anymore in terms of the top folks running for all these offices. There's, you know, no one's talking about doing right to work or other things.
I don't
things.
Think the unions trust them, though, because they keep their billboards up.
Oh, I don't know.
There are certainly GOP lawmakers that are still interested in
sure.
it, but the clout that they have and the ability to make it actually happen is much diminished from
right.
SB5 era.
I mean, Larry Householder, who wants to be the Speaker next year and is, you know, that he's in a fight with Ryan Smith. I mean, one of his key, you know, one of the key things he's out there saying is he's with the trade unions, which they would not be with him if he was out there talking about doing a right to work bill or doing getting rid of prevailing wage or getting rid of, union contracting.
Well, that's interesting because the organized labor has been a force in Ohio politics for 150,000 years. And do they dilute the interest among organized labor voters when there's not that issue out there?
It's always possible. I mean, whenever, you know, being a, you know, trying to defend against something makes you a lot more excited than just trying to hold the status quo from, you know, with people who say they agree with you. So that's possible. But it also, you know, some would say it also kind of takes the issue off the table, and therefore that could have a benefit. And you also and you mentioned over in the Youngstown area, and that's kind of swath of eastern Ohio. One thing I do know is happening is Joe Schiavone, who ran for governor as on the Democratic ticket and lost. But he has been over in that area talking up folks, talking up his own supporters, saying, look, you know, you need to rally behind Rich Cordray. He's the guy for you. I'm trying to talk to some Trump voters.
Get out the vote.
And mm-hmm. and bring them back into the fold.
Those are definitely going to be some key areas. If Cordray is going to win, those are going to be some key areas that went Trump's way. That went mm-hmm. Donald Trump's way in 2016, but also went Barack Obama's way in 2014.
Right. And by double digits. I mean,
2012.
Yeah, I guess 2012. We used to call them Reagan Democrats. Is it safe to call them Trump Democrats?
There are definitely
possibly.
Trump Democrats.
Yeah,
I mean, there's mm-hmm. no doubt about it, especially in that region of the state. I mean, there's a number of areas of the state where, you know, the Trump supporters were Republican before and will always be. But over there, I mean, look at some of those. I've been looking at some of the legislative districts out there and some of the numbers. I mean, you've got, you know, districts that Obama won by 14 points are, you know, went suddenly 15, 20 points to Trump the mm-hmm. next, you know, in 2016. Mm-hmm. So they got to, you know, Democrats don't necessarily need to win them all back because of their strength, I think, that's growing in the suburban areas. But they do need to win some of them back. at least, and stop the bleeding out there if they want to be successful. Meanwhile, DeWine needs to give them a reason to stay in the Republican camp.
One issue that has distinguished them each is issue one, the ballot issue that asks voters to sort of change the trajectory of from punishment to treatment when it comes to dealing with drug offenders. DeWine has come out fully against it, as a lot of people have. I don't know how it's polling right now, but Cordray has said that he supports it. So what do you think?
I think anecdotally, I think we've seen a big change in the tide when it comes to issue one. I think when it first came out, supporters of the issue had an easy time saying this is going to reduce the prison population. It's going to put more money into treatment. It's going to steer people away from prison and to treatment. And I think supporters kind of had the momentum going. But over the past couple of weeks, when people have been able to break down the issue and really talk about it, the opposition seems to have, touched on a key point of the issue, which is that this would be put into the Constitution, which is hard to amend, and it could saddle Ohio with a lot of unintended consequences that, again, you can't change. And I think we've seen this change where the momentum is now on the side of the opponents of issue one.
Yeah, I know Ohio Supreme Court Chief Justice Maureen O'Connor came out with kind of this fact that up to just shy of 20 grams of fentanyl would be treated as a misdemeanor. And that is enough to, be about 10,000 fatal doses. Fentanyl is extremely powerful. It is a dangerous drug in Ohio, and it is a key in a lot of overdoses in Southwest Ohio, at the very least. And so I think that fact, that piece of information, has been really powerful for opponents of this legislation. And I think that is going to be a key issue in whether it passes or not.
We are going to be talking about issue one on October 10th, Wednesday, October 10th. And Chief Justice of the Ohio Supreme Court, Maureen O'Connor, will be with us. So we'll be talking about that. But that fact that she has raised to the fore is something that Mike DeWine has been using very, very potently against Rich Cordray on television ads.
Well, I don't think – I have a feeling issue one was not written with fentanyl in mind. I mean, when you're talking about – I mean, because it's clearly written so that if you have a small amount of drugs – you're not going to go to prison.
Right.
You're going to get a misdemeanor charge, because that's the goal, is to keep these folks who may be addicted to drugs, who may just be casual users, out of prison.
It wasn't written with that in mind, but could it be a problem?
Well, yeah, it can. It is a problem, because no one envisioned a drug of that power in that small of an amount to be that potent and deadly. I can't imagine they envisioned that when they wrote this, because it's not accounted for. Now, look, the arguments by the issue one supporters are that this can, there are still the ability to charge these folks as being drug dealers if they have a certain amount. But even if they have a small amount and you think they're drug dealing, you can charge them with that. But I do think it does muddy things up a bit. There's also this issue about, if there's no jail time hanging over any of these folks' heads, will any of them really go into treatment? There's a lot of folks arguing that won't happen anymore because there's no incentive. But the supporters say this kind of law has passed in more than 10 other states, and those states are not seeing those kind of problems. So they're saying they're calling it fear-mongering and that it's just being blown out of proportion.
This is an issue that, this comes up every once in a while where prosecutors see this as an issue that can take leverage away from them.
And judges as well.
And so again, the idea is, okay, so let's say they do have 19 grams of fentanyl. Supporters of issue one say, well, you can still charge them with dealing or trafficking. But then fiscal conservatives are saying, well, that's still not good, because then all of a sudden you have a ton of people who you could sort of leverage to send to treatment, because you're going to say, hey, you have all these drugs. I'm going to charge you with trafficking unless you opt for treatment. And prosecutors are saying you're taking that kind of leverage off the table.
Huh. If you have 19 grams of fentanyl on you, though, if you're not dealing, you're just going to be dead soon.
Yeah,
right?
I was going to say.
You're going to be dead. If you are actually holding that because you're going to take
and
it.
And I wondered how many people are actually busted with that much fentanyl.
Yeah, I haven't done a study or anything like that.
I haven't heard of anybody. That's not what they're, you know.
Well, that's part of the problem with the drug.
It gets dispersed very quickly.
It does, and it comes in such small quantities that people can hide it very easily and transport it very easily. I mean, we're not talking about, you know, 5-pound bricks of marijuana or heroin.
It's not like legions of fentanyl dealers are going to be filling up our prisons or would have been. Mm-hmm. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They weren't getting them anyways. We're going to continue our conversation. We're talking about what they're going to talk about tonight at the third and final debate between Republican Mike DeWine and Democrat Rich Cordray, both candidates for governor in the state of Ohio. They're the major party candidates. Listeners, what do you want to talk about? What do you want to hear from them? 614-292-8513 or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. Still with us, Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau reporter Andy Chow, Columbus Dispatch State House reporter Jim Siegel, and Cincinnati Enquirer State Government reporter Jesse Balmert. What do you want to hear the gubernatorial candidates discuss at the debate tonight at Cleveland State University? Give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. So we were talking off air, Medicaid, it's still unclear what particularly the Republican Mike DeWine would do with Medicaid expansion. Mm-hmm. We know that Rich Cordray has pretty much said he'd basically keep it the same, but try to improve it. Do you think that this is something, Jesse Balmert, that they'll get at and get to the bottom of tonight at the debate?
So I hope it's something that comes up at the debate tonight because it is a topic that is important to a lot of voters. I think the Quinnipiac poll had healthcare as the number one issue that people were interested in this midterm election. And it hasn't been very clear what either Mike DeWine or Rich Cordray would do about Medicaid expansion. Both have said that they would keep it. That was one of John Kasich's kind of prerequisites mm-hmm. to get his support and endorsement for Mike DeWine, the mm-hmm. Republican. And so Mike DeWine has come out and said, I would keep Medicaid expansion, but he wants to do some tweaks such as work requirements, which are things that Ohio has already looked into a little bit. And so, you know, not to be trite, but the devil's in the details on these things. And one little tweak could mean a lot of people are off of Medicaid.
I thought this was going to be the very first question in the first debate is what are you going to do mm-hmm. with Medicaid expansion? Because it plays such a big role here in Ohio, creating, you know, way more access to health care for thousands of Ohioans. And again, this was sort of the thing that Cordray's camp was pushing DeWine on for several weeks early on in the campaign because, you know, DeWine, his first day in office as attorney general, he you know, filed a lawsuit to try to repeal the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. Now, DeWine has said that he supports Medicaid expansion, but like Jesse said, he wants to put some cost guardrails in play because he doesn't think that it's sustainable in its current form. But again, exactly what does that mean? What is he going to do? He says he wants to create wellness programs. Ohio already has wellness programs mm-hmm. to incentivize, you know, taking care of yourself. Ohio also already tried to get work requirements in play, and that's still, I think, in the waiver process. They need to get it cleared by the feds. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I would love to know more about what the candidates would do when it comes to Medicaid mm-hmm. expansion.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to hear him talk about, you know, you say it's Medicaid is unsustainable. Okay, it certainly it's grown a lot over the years, and there's an argument to be made for that. However, the question is why? Why is it unsustainable? What is currently causing that? And you know, and if you can answer the why, then what do you do about that? Again, I just think we need to get to more detail about what exactly we're talking about doing with this program, with Medicaid, which is the largest part of the state budget, billions and billions of dollars. And so it's very important to, you know, to Ohioans, not only for those who are on the program getting health care, but also for, you know, the millions of Ohioans paying taxes to the state and funding it.
You also have to remember we have a Republican-controlled legislature that passed a bill to freeze Medicaid expansion enrollment. That was that freeze had to be vetoed by Governor John Kasich in order for it to not go into effect. After the first debate, I asked Mike DeWine if he would veto such a bill if it came around again.
Yeah.
He sort of seemed to not have the answer. That's when his lieutenant governor candidate or running mate, John Husted, stepped in. And Husted said the legislature would not propose such a measure again because they would be happy with the proposals that DeWine would put forth to control Medicaid costs.
Really?
So, again, it's just sort of up in the air.
I like that answer.
Yeah.
They wouldn't do this again.
Speaking for the Ohio General Assembly, by the way, that's
interesting. Well, they're going to love our plan so much, they're not going to do what they just did.
He seemed to have
confidence that Republican legislatures would like what DeWine would put into play.
And that's very possible. I mean, I'm not dismissing it. I just like the politics of that answer.
We're going to put forward such great ideas. They won't have to do that. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And as Andy pointed out, because Mike DeWine sued over the Affordable Care Act, Democrats are just kind of wary of how Mike DeWine would handle a portion of that Affordable Care Act, which was the Medicaid expansion. They've also hit him on pre-existing conditions, which Mike DeWine says that he supports protection for, but obviously, again, sued over the Affordable Care Act, which pre-existing conditions were a part of.
We also have no idea what the makeup of the U.S. Senate and the U.S. House is going to be after the midterms, and this is a Congress in the past that tried to get rid and make changes to the Affordable Care Act, and
when Republicans controlled the whole kit and caboodle,
right? So we don't know what's going to happen on the Fed's side of things either.
You're listening to our weekly reporter roundtable on All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. We've been talking about what they're going to talk about tonight at the third and final debate between Republican Mike DeWine and Democrat Rich Cordray, both candidates for governor. Bob in Lancaster, you're on the air. Hi, Bob.
Hi. Actually, my name is Brandon, but no worries. My issue, I guess, more of a question, is I don't really feel represented by either of the two that are up there. We actually have four different candidates running for governor. I personally would like to be able to hear, you know, from all four candidates instead of really seeing those two just kind of fight between each other for the majority of the debate. I want to hear what all people have to say. I want to hear what the best solutions are because we've got a lot of issues. And there's not a whole lot of difference between them two that are up there tonight. So especially Travis Irvine and for the Libertarian Party, there's a lady for the Green Party. I can't think of her name. Constance, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I would love to hear the four of them. I want to hear all sides because it's just more choices is always better.
Well, they do. You know, I was looking at a Pew analysis going back to the beginning of time, and voter turnout in the United States and voter enthusiasm was at its highest when there were more choices, when there were more parties, when it wasn't so too party dominated. No question about that, Brandon. Brandon, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, I think this is
Sorry,
Brandon. I think this is a message that's resonated since 2016 when there were a lot of people out there who felt like they didn't like Democratic nominee Hillary Clinton or Republican nominee Donald Trump, and they wanted other choices. And I think, like you said, there's the Libertarian nominee for governor is Travis Irvine. The Green Party candidate is Constance Goodell Newton. It sounds like these debates, I was part of a forum last week that had certain rules in play that led to both candidates being excluded because they weren't polling high enough.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually how, if people are wondering, that's usually how the makeup of these debates and forums go if they're not polling a certain amount from independent pollsters. But yeah, I mean, those two candidates are also out there, and they both have websites that detail a lot of their policies as well.
Are they reaching out to State House reporters a lot? I mean, are you guys hearing from them a lot?
Not, I'll just speak for myself, not too much other than there was a candidate rollout event about a month and a half ago. Other than that, I have heard from them when it comes to lawsuits and filing complaints about being excluded from these debates.
And I know the Green Party candidate, Constance Goodell Newton, was campaigning with Jill Stein, who was the presidential candidate for the Green Party in 2016 around the state. That was, you know, one thing she was doing to get out. And I know the Cleveland.com editorial board last week included Travis Irvine, the Libertarian candidate. I'm not privy to whether Goodell Newton was invited or able to attend.
And just speaking of voter enthusiasm again, you know, I was talking about 2016. The Libertarians were able to regain their minor party status because Gary Johnson earned enough votes in Ohio during the 2016 presidential election. So there are people out there who are looking for other candidates.
Bill in Cleveland, you're on the air. Hi, Bill.
Yes, good morning. My question is for the candidates and for your panel is, I'm waiting to hear from the candidate about criminal justice reform and the aspect of racial discrimination within the prison complex, and also, you know, the African Americans here in Ohio primarily make up the prison population, but there's such disparity and racial slurs amongst this population, and I just really want to hear what the candidates would do if they would do anything. And I'll take my comment.
Okay, Bill. Thanks a lot for your call. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, the Ohio Legislative Black Caucus last week endorsed issue one. And I think part of their messaging is that, look, you know, this is, you know, for many, many years, they believe there's been an inherent unfairness in the system, putting more black folks in jail rather than, you know, compared to whites, folks who do similar, you know, commit similar crimes, that the black population makes up a very disproportionate segment of the prison population in Ohio. And it is something that should be discussed. And it would be curious to hear what each candidate would have to say about the issue, because especially, I mean, whenever you interject something like that into a debate, everyone gets a little uncomfortable, which is nice. Get them a little bit off of their center points and their talking points, and make them talk about some issues that are a little more difficult, like race and the justice system.
And issue one has kind of sucked all the air out of the room when it comes to criminal justice reform. But there are other issues out there, such as bail reform, that we really haven't heard from the candidates. One thing I will say is we have seen, I believe, every session of the Ohio legislature that we do see sort of a big comprehensive bill trying to tackle criminal justice reform. And those bills have been used as examples for opponents of issue one, because you'll have this big sweeping reform, and then the next year the legislature will have to come back to the table to make some changes here or there, because they say criminal justice reform is something that's very difficult and complex. So they're saying that that's something, again, that is hard to just change if you put it right into the Constitution. But again, there's, like Bill's saying, there's all sorts of other things, especially when it comes to race relations and mandatory minimums, that can and should be addressed. But candidates haven't really been talking about it because they've just been focusing on issue one.
And I know the one candidate that, you know, sticks out to me who has addressed this a little bit is the Democratic treasurer candidate, Rob Richardson, who is running against Republican Robert Sprague. Richardson, who is an African-American himself, is encouraging a shift away from for-profit prisons and really wanted to get some big issue, civil rights kind of more involved in that particular office. And that's really the candidate that I've seen touch on those issues more so than anyone else. Yeah.
The point being with for-profit prisons is that creates an entity that has a vested interest in maintaining a harshly punitive justice system because they need inmates to make money. We'll take a break. We'll continue our conversation. This is our weekly reporter roundtable. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. It's our weekly reporter roundtable. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. My guests, Jesse Balmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer, Jim Siegel of Columbus Dispatch, and Andy Chow of Ohio Public Radio State House News Bureau. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. Back to the governor's race, Jesse, you wrote about who's funding the campaigns and how much the candidates have raised. It's a record breaker again. Every 4 years, it seems like it's another record breaker, all things being equal. Who's got the most money? What are we talking about?
Well, I think the narrative that's been interesting to me this midterm election has been how well Democrats have done raising money, really, from the governor's race, but even the statewide races, Secretary of State, Treasurer, Auditor, Attorney General, they've been able to outraise their GOP incumbents almost because they've been statewide office holders previously in cycle after cycle. With the most recent reports, we still don't have recent expenditure data, how much they've been spending. And so it's hard to see how much they all have left in the pot to spend. But both Mike DeWine and Rich Cordray have millions to spend on ads. And I'm sure you're noticing that if you are watching television recently.
Yeah, we're going to see that ramp up.
Is there much dark money in the campaigns in Ohio?
There have been outside groups that have been participating, but a lot of them have been like the Democratic Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association, which aren't really dark money. You can see where those dollars are coming from. There are some PACs, but I guess I've been surprised how if there is a lot of dark money, I guess I haven't been noticing it as much as in other races.
I mean, there has been a lot of outside money coming into the races, but I don't know if they would be categorized as dark money or not. Something that sticks out is Danny O'Connor, the Democratic candidate for the 12th congressional district, has raised a lot of money, and a lot of it's come from outside. And I think the narrative has been nationwide that Democratic candidates have been getting a lot of money in small bills. So like been getting a lot of $20 donations, maybe $50 donations. And I think that's reflecting this sort of climate that we have. We saw all the protests and rallies after President Donald Trump won election. And I think that's sort of manifesting itself in these smaller donations from a lot of people from around the country into other states, into other campaigns.
Yeah, I thought one of the more interesting statistics was for the last month, which they're at this point they're reporting month to month, and so September, Rich Cordray got 15,000 individual contributions to his campaign, compared to I believe 1,600 for DeWine. I mean, it was nine times the number of now Cordray only outraised DeWine by maybe 10%. But just in the sheer number of contributions coming in, and it was like that in other races too, like Kathleen Clyde in the Secretary of State's race, the Democrat just had, I think, had 10 times, 11 times the amount of the number of contributions that the Republican Frank LaRose had. And it's just an amazing amount of progressive grassroots support that is coming in from in Ohio and across the country right now as they're kind of deciding where to send their $25, $50 checks.
And when I looked at the numbers after the previous report, there was a a higher percentage of Mike DeWine's money was coming from inside Ohio. It wasn't a huge discrepancy, but Rich Cordray had a higher percentage of money coming from other parts of the country, which might speak to that enthusiasm and also speaks to the fact that Rich Cordray did work in Washington, D.C. For the past, you know, several years and has friends there.
I also think it helps Democrats that they, you know, in a state like Ohio, which is competitive, you know, they're able to get money from like New York and California, where very Democratic. They don't, those folks up there, they don't really have a need to be sending their candidates $25 and $50 checks. I mean, those folks are going to win in most of those instances. There's not nearly the competitiveness out there. And so I think folks in Ohio benefit from some really big blue states that where the folks just want to send their money other places to help out where it wouldn't really do as much good in their own backyards.
I'll also just add to that, these individual donations and small bill donations coming in from out of state, I think also reflected in that is it's been interesting to talk to people who I would have said that they were maybe just casual spectators of politics. And now I feel like you ask anybody who the key swing votes were in the U.S. Senate vote for Brett Kavanaugh. And a lot of people were saying names like Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, these people who you don't usually talk about. I feel like there's a lot of people out there who know a lot more about what's going on, at least on the federal level.
I saw somebody, you know, tweet something about Susan Collins saying, I'm going to support your opponent. I mean, somebody from here saying, I'm going to send money to support your opponent. And I wonder, really? You really would do that? I mean, and apparently, yeah. I mean, really, people are doing that, whether it achieves the ultimate goal or not. But people do seem to have this global point of view now, whereas all politics isn't just local anymore.
Mm-hmm.
It's global, you know, it's nationwide.
And so somebody in Ohio who might not like the way Susan Collins voted, because there's such an intense spotlight on certain people now where it's like, okay, we're following these things 24/7 and all of a sudden Susan Collins is in the spotlight for an hour. So everybody knows who she is now.
Well, let's talk about what the influence of the Kavanaugh hearings and the ultimate vote and the you know, he's been sworn into the U.S. Supreme Court now for a lifetime appointment. People were saying that it got to the point where those hearings and that controversy was igniting Republican voters in a way that was unexpected. And now I'm wondering, all right, did it happen too soon? Because they've got to maintain that enthusiasm among Republican voters in an off year, in a midterm. Do you think they can?
Yeah. So I think the U.S. Supreme Court justice vote has certainly enthused and fired up both sides. Mm-hmm. For Republicans, it reminds them why they elected Donald Trump. You don't like the way he tweets, but you really like that he's going to appoint conservative U.S. Supreme Court justices. And this is just one more reason why you should continue to vote Republican in November. And I've talked with Republicans, talked to the local folks, and this is something that has really got them enthusiastic about the midterm elections. For Democrats, it has, you know, the same kind of enthusiastic response because they see, you know, this is how it's working in Washington. We're upset about this vote. We're upset that Dr. Ford wasn't believed. And so now we're going to go out and rally for our candidates. Like you said, the big question is, do you sustain that enthusiasm over the next 30 plus days? Mm-hmm. Especially given the news cycle, how frequently there's something new coming up.
Yeah,
it'll be challenging.
So it may or may not, keep people engaged and enthused. But I think it would have been tougher on the Republicans had they not confirmed Kavanaugh, because I think that would have been a bigger blow in the way of discouraging voters from getting out and vote for the Republican side.
Yeah, and I would say I'm curious to see what the polls look like in 2 weeks,
two weeks
from now, not necessarily today, because yes, I do think this energized Republicans more. It energized Democrats as well, but the Democrats were already energized.
Right.
They didn't have room to grow,
right,
in terms of their energy. But the Republicans did, and I think that certainly helped. But like Jesse said, give it like 2 weeks,
yeah,
and then see what else we're talking about in 2 weeks. Because look, I don't know about it. I've actually kind of found it a little refreshing that I haven't had to hear much about the Mueller investigation for the last few weeks. It's just been nice to not have to hear that constant drumbeat from that,
well, and
even when there's
the,
nothing actually happening.
And the New York Times report about Donald Trump's alleged tax dodging came out right at the height of the Kavanaugh hearings and the Kavanaugh controversy and kind of got lost in the shuffle. I heard someone say, you know, that this is going to come back and this is not over with yet. So we'll see about that. There are things simmering, that's for sure. Justin in Columbus, you're on the air. You wanted to talk about issue one. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to clear up a lot of I petitioned with the campaign and I was a canvasser. And what I found out, there was a lot of misconceptions when I was out there. I got to meet a lot of people and I'm very proud of what I did while I was out there. And a lot of people didn't realize the issue in America we have with the prison industrial complex and how we like to imprison people for the sake of profit and how a lot of these laws are there due to that and how effective it would be if instead of institutionalizing people, we would actually rehabilitate them. And I just want to make sure to clear up effectively that misconception, but this bill will actually help people and get people the help and the programs that they actually need. Instead of continuing the cycle of incarcerating people and institutionalizing them and not effectively rehabilitating them.
Justin, thanks for your call. I just want to remind listeners that we will be talking about this in detail on Wednesday, October 10th. So stay with us for that. Tune in for that. It'll be at 11 a.m. on Wednesday. Justin, thanks for that call. What does Trump do now, do you think, to improve the prospects for Republican candidates in a state like Ohio? Does he come back again?
I think it has
He's coming Friday.
That's right. That's right. On the 12th.
Here.
That's right. Duh.
And I think it also has to be very strategized where, you know, like what we were talking about with the statewide candidates, it's kind of hard to tell if his support, if his, you know, gung-ho support would help or hurt somebody like DeWine. But what we saw in more localized races or congressional races like Troy Balderson in the 12th, we saw that that really did seem to energize Republican voters in that district.
And I think that's why he's coming to the Cincinnati area on Friday. There is a congressional race, the first district between Steve Chabot, who is the Republican incumbent, and Aftab Perival, who's the Democratic challenger. And I think in that race, Donald Trump could certainly be helpful in the more conservative parts of the Cincinnati area, reminding them that, you know, Steve Chabot is in a tough race in that district and really even a tighter partisan margin than the 12th district, which got a lot of attention in August.
And if he can ride in with the wave of, you know, confirming Brett Kavanaugh, again, an issue that I think a lot of Southwest Ohio Republicans are happy about, then, you know, I think that only helps him when he's rallying for Chabot.
Why is that race so tight?
Well, it's partially because the divide between Democrats and Republicans is a little bit tighter. There are a number of Democrats in the more Cincinnati portions of that district and a lot of Republicans in the more rural kind of outstretched parts of that district. But also it's something you're seeing play out nationally. You have this young up-and-coming Democratic star in the clerk of courts from Hamilton County, Aftab Perival. And then you have Steve Chabot, who has faced challengers, but not really serious challengers in the past. And then, you know, the Democrats are trying to ride this wave of dissatisfaction with the president or the way things are being run.
Yeah, I think it's like Jesse said, it's a combination of all those things. There's this, you know, perceived blue wave. So there's a lot of people who are energized on the left. There, Aftab is a young up and coming person who has a lot of energy himself. And so I think it's just a mix of all these things. And so a district that should probably pretty safe for Republican is a little tighter.
It's also that district is a fantastic lesson in gerrymandering as well. I mean, they literally took Cincinnati's black population and sliced it in half, put half of it in that district and half of it in, what is that next door, the second?
Winthrop's district.
Mm-hmm. I mean, basically completely diluting it into two Republican districts. I mean, it is a masterful job of gerrymandering and the exact thing that they're hoping will be avoided when they draw the maps again under a new process.
And then just north of there, you have former John Boehner's district, the former U.S. Speaker of the House, who's from the Butler County area. So they knew what they were doing in the Cincinnati.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did. Well, then they knew what they were doing with the 12th district, too. I mean, that district is only in play because it's such a bad year here for Republicans. And the suburbs are turning away from Trump in droves at this point. And so that's the only reason that district is even in play. I mean, that should withhold a whole lot of blue wave. But
what about the gender gap? Is that going to play a role in Ohio this year?
Depends on who comes out and votes. I mean, it's real. Mm-hmm. I mean, women, I mean, if you just look at the Kavanaugh numbers, women were way opposed to Kavanaugh. I think it was like almost 20 points. Women were opposed to Kavanaugh, but men were in support of him by like 9 points. So it seems like just about everything political these days seems to have a pretty large gender gap at this point.
And I think when we do see upsets, and when we have seen upsets around the country, the Alabama senator, was it Roy Moore? I'm forgetting. Okay, yes. Roy Moore. Like we saw that the turnout from women, especially black women, really helped get the Democratic challenger over the hump to beat Roy Moore there. So we've seen that a bigger turnout from women plays a huge role in these tight races.
Jen Miller of the Ohio League of Women Voters, you're on the air. Welcome, Jen.
Hi, Ann. I just wanted to mention a couple things. One is tomorrow is the deadline for voter registration.
Yep.
Number two, early voting starts, this week as well. So this idea that we need to keep energy up for voting and engagement for another 30 days isn't quite accurate because folks are going to start voting this week. Mm-hmm. But most importantly, for individuals who are interested in hearing from all sides, our very respected nonpartisan voter guide, vote411.org, has information from all the candidates, majority party, minority party, write-in, and we do not edit their responses at all. They are there in their entirety, so I know sometimes people feel like they only get sound bites. That's not what's provided there. So I wanted to share that, and I agree that I think this is going to be a big year for all voters, but I think especially women. We are at the 98th anniversary of women's right to vote, and women are really becoming energized again, and we're excited to see that at the League.
Jen Miller of the League of Women Voters of Ohio, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Next hour, we're going to be talking about Get Out the Vote. We're going to be talking about efforts by different kinds of organizations to get out the vote. Tomorrow is the last day to register in the state of Ohio. It's a month before, 30 days before the midterm elections. But as Jen Miller pointed out, early voting starts this week as well. So a lot happening. A lot's at stake. I want to thank my guest, Jim Siegel of the Columbus Dispatch, Statehouse reporter. Thanks for joining us today.
Glad to be here.
And Andy Chow of the Ohio Public Radio Statehouse News Bureau. Thanks to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And Jesse Ballmert of the Cincinnati Enquirer. Thanks as always.
Thank you.
Thanks to everybody else for giving us a call, and thanks for listening. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.